Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking,
real estate is a tool to get to financial freedom. And so it is cold, calculated math. It is capitalistic. It is what is the right investment? How is it going to work? And how does it fit into my system? And in a practical sense, I've learned like you can't model this out because over the years, you should earn more income and increase your monthly cash flow on an average basis. So you're making slightly larger bets each time you make a bet.
Here's the one. I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Shit, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Cinderella story, out of nowhere.
It's in the hole!
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking. Today is powerful. I feel like by the time today's over, Eric, I'm going to be set for life. I really believe that to be an accurate
I see what
statement.
You did there. I see what you did there. Oh, that's pretty good.
Well, Scott Trench will be on the show today. Scott Trench he's probably known by everybody who listens to us because he is the CEO of Bigger Pockets, our favorite podcast, but also an author and a podcaster. And I think we all know that because he has podcast money, Bigger Pockets money, I should say. But without any further delay, we should invite this fella to the show and bring him on board. Come on up to the stage, Scott. Come on, get out of the crowd. Come on up.
Scott, all right, here I come.
On the stage. Scott, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's good to have you.
It's a big pleasure. And as a matter of fact, Eric, it almost sounded like we were doing a clubhouse there for a minute or something, right? Where you can bounce people up.
Yeah. Hey, come here. I want to reset the room. You know, all the lingo that they use in there.
I don't know it as much as you. Scott probably, he's probably on cutting edge because he's a technologist.
I've never been on Clubhouse.
Well.
And here's an embarrassing thing. I go, so, you know, you're on your phone sometimes when you're, you know, on the throne and you're like, am I being listened to? Can they see me? I don't know. So
I know.
Just exit out immediately and I deleted it because because of all the apps there. I was like, I don't want people. what if something goes wrong here? That's not good.
Oh, so, terrible. Yeah. That would be terrible. But no, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Finally.
This is going to be a power-packed show. I think we're going to be able to cover a lot of the things we think are important and principled about the version of capital hacking. And we talk about, as I was mentioning to Scott, all of us listeners out there, we do talk a lot about the human capital and how it will, by developing it, by consciously making great choices in our own life, how we can attract the cash capital. And it all starts working together very powerfully. So, Eric, may I ask you to begin our show?
Of course. The thing is, what's funny about this question, anyone who's a Bigger Pockets follower, especially our audience, a lot of them are, they've heard you on episode 99. They've heard you on episode 223 when you were the VP of ops at the time. You know, they know a lot about your history and, but yeah, let's give them an idea of the trajectory and the growth of Scott Trench to date.
But Eric always says I wanted to ask the epiphany question.
Right,
like, well, what bug bit your neck and made you Spider-Man, Scott? Like, why did you change your way of thinking too, right?
Yeah, sure. So I when I graduated college in 2013, I started a job as a financial analyst at a Fortune 500 company and promptly hated it. I realized that the best case scenario is I would advance through the ranks slowly and become CFO for a 20-year period if I was really, really good and won, right? And I was like, that's not winning even if I win. And so I became obsessed with the kind of financial independence movement. I couldn't tell you where I first kind of began down the rabbit hole, but the hook for me was Mr. Money Mustache, a blog that is about financial freedom through badassity. So he bikes to work and makes all his, you know, never eats out and all that kind of stuff. And he is like, I think a godfather of the financial independence movement. And that kind of opened my eyes to the math of like, hey, the less I spend, the more cash I accumulate, the more I have to invest. And the less cash flow that I need to sustain my lifestyle. It's a lot easier to generate $2,000 a month if you can live out $24,000 than it is to generate $10,000 a month if you need $120,000 a year to live, right? So that was kind of the eye-opening piece to me. I was able to build a model at that point of like, oh, I'm like, I could retire in 12 years at the savings rate of like 54% if I can get that down, no problem. And I'll get some raises and all that stuff to accelerate it. But I was like, that's still very slow. How can I accelerate that even further? And so that's where Enter Bigger Pockets comes in. I'm like, oh, real estate is the key here. I can get better returns and I can shave that from 12 to 7 years to retire if I do the freedom, the frugality thing in real estate. And then one day I'm sitting there at my desk and I'm like, and a guy at my coworker says like, you keep talking about this financial freedom stuff, but you're just not going to get rich sitting in that chair right there. And I'm like, he's right. The game I just outlined of moving up the ranks through the finance team and then finally becoming CFO, it's just not a winnable game. And so I realized I had to change my career as well. And so by July of 2014, I had met a group of entrepreneurs locally, began meeting with them, taking them out to lunch one by one and looking for other job opportunities. I was considering becoming a real estate agent. I considered a number of other job opportunities, but it really boiled down to, I was between becoming a real estate agent and joining Bigger Pockets. And the way I joined Bigger Pockets was that one of the people in that mastermind group, I took him out to lunch and asked, and he worked in the same co-working space as the founder of Bigger Pockets, Josh Dorkin. And I was like, oh my God, this guy, Josh, you changed my life. Can I get you lunch? He's like, go away, kid. He tells me to stop bugging him a few times. So I follow up six more times and he finally allows me to meet with him, which turns into an interview. And here we are. And I became the director of operations.
Well done.
Yeah. So that was obviously a big moment as you join a rocket ship as the third employee. That can be a big boost to your career. Pro tip there.
Yeah, baby.
And so by the end of 2014, a year after I graduated, I'm sitting there. I have got this new job as the director of operations at Bigger Pockets, a company that, you know, who knows if it's profitable or not before I joined. And I got 7 days vacation. Thanks, Josh. and all that kind of stuff. But I also buy my first duplex house hack, which is another big moment. And so that label, you know, between those two things, over the course of the next 2 years, I'm able to really dwindle down my living expenses, save a tremendous amount of money, and I begin increasing my income steadily as I sell things for Bigger Pockets, ads on the podcast and those types of things. You might have noticed that the podcast grew from in 2014, 15, 16. Those were good years for the guy selling the ads behind that. And then I eventually took over more and more operations for the business and just kept plowing. Like if I was saving $1,000 a month when I joined Bigger Pockets, I was saving $2,000 the next year, $2,500 a month, and then $3,000. And so there's no like event for my income over this period. It's just me advancing at work through Bigger Pockets, me buying more rental property, me investing the surplus cash I have into stocks and so on and so forth and keeping that snowball progressing.
By the way, this is super chronological and awesome the way you're explaining it. It is amazing to think that you were the third employee of Bigger Pockets. That's funny. I didn't realize it was that small when you got there. God bless you. Keep going. I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, well, I was the third full-time employee, but there are other folks there that contributed. Like we have long time, we had an engineer for a very long time who's still with us and is now an employee who was there earlier than me. So I was the third like employee, but there was a couple other folks there as well. Okay, so the big event, I guess, I said there was no event. There was an event. The event was, I think, in 2017, 2018, when Josh promotes me to president and we begin looking for equity partners for the business. And so in 2018, we went through a process to bring on a private equity sponsor, McCarthy Capital. And that is a career moment for anybody. And it was particularly ridiculous to go through that as starting as a 27-year-old and finishing as a 28-year-old in 2018. And that was a big event for me. That was like, okay, I was getting close to FI or maybe past it. Now I'm done with this because there's a nice bonus for that. And for some reason, the board, which now comprises the private equity group and Josh, decided to allow me to stay on with the title CEO. And so here we are talking about this 2 years later as things continue to kind of, the flywheel continues for Bigger Pockets, I guess. And all that time I've been continuing to just live reasonably frugally. I house hacked up until August of 2020. And now I rent a little place. But yeah, I just continue to live frugally and stack the cash into index fund investments, real estate, both syndications and stuff I continue to invest in.
Can we go back a little bit into time where that aha moment came and, you know, starting to see the zeros and ones behind financial freedom and creating that for yourself? What was your personal life like? You know, what was your situation from you know, like a lot of us, the aha and the why moment is like my kids and my family. And like, I gotta, you know, oh my God, I'm just realizing now I'm 40 years old and I have kids coming and I gotta create wealth for them. Like, I'm always fascinated by 20 somethings that are like, they get it. They didn't need the kid why, or like, what was your situation at the time?
Well, I was 23. I just went to Europe with a couple of my best buds. I was in a fraternity in college and social chair and captain of the rugby club. And so I was a phenomenal, still am, beer pong player at the time. And really that was kind of my, you know, I was working and, you know, it was Thursday night. We're going out. We're going to be a little hungover to work, but that's fine. On Friday. And then in Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'm going to be out about town, you know, doing that kind of stuff. So that was where I was. I would say, generally speaking, I could see far enough ahead that like that was going to dwindle to Friday and then Saturday and then Saturday night. And then it was going to be Saturday. Then it was going to be Saturday night. Then it was going to be nothing. Where we are now with that. And like, thank goodness, because that, you know, it's great to do that every once in a while, but like you got to grow up at some point. But anyways, that's where I was at the time, to be honest. So yeah, I guess I could see far enough ahead though that like I wouldn't want to be constrained by money downstream. I was incredibly ambitious and believe arrogantly that I had the talents and the abilities to, you know, do more than that, climb that ladder that I mentioned to you guys earlier. And this seemed to be a way to do it.
Yeah, that's the gift that you have and other major achievers of, you know, is this a millennial age group you're in? I guess you're right, you're millennial.
I'm smack in the middle, yep.
Yeah, so there's the gifts. You know, everybody talks about there's always pros and cons for every generation. And the greatest gift of your generation is the search for the meaning and the ability to know that the grind itself is not your meaning. You know, I think most people a generation or two ago would have thought that climbing that 20-step ladder that you just described was their why. Like, this is what I'm here to do, man. I'm here to climb this ladder. I'm supposed to get married in a few years and boom, boom, boom. But you guys have always kind of scratched at this underneath the surfaces, said, where's my heart and where am I going to be? And for you, I think the thing that caught your heart listening to it from the outside was fire, as you always say, you know, fire, financial independence, retire early. Now, you didn't say retire early today. You kept calling it financial independence. And when I was double checking your book, Set for Life, it said financial independence, retire young. So I imagine the retire early. See, that's actually what I wanted to start the conversation with. Okay, first of all, let's describe what financial independence means to you. And then let's describe the retire early part and whether or not that's still a goal of yours. I'm not sure it is, but maybe it is. What is financial independence to you and why is it so important in this world?
Yeah, and there may be something on the cover there that says that, but like throughout the book, if you're referring to Set for Life, I use the term financial freedom very carefully every time with this because it's about financial freedom, not necessarily retirement. Now, some folks call it retirement and you can get it really into nuance if you want to go into the various forums around the financial independence and FIRE movement space. It's retirement. It's financial freedom. It's financial independence. Who cares? All right. For me, what it is it's the ability not to depend on wage income to fund your lifestyle. And if you get across that hump and maintain that, then money can never buy you. Right. And that's the point to get across. I have crossed that hurdle and now I've got a bigger why with that, right? Like, yes, I make good money as the CEO of Bigger Pockets. And, you know, if things go well, I may make a very large amount of money over the years with this. Right. But that's not really the motivating factor. I'm very mission driven, right? Like, what are we trying to do here? When you help people become financially free, especially early in life, I believe that these are people who have a disproportionately high probability of having a positive impact downstream on society. These are the people that will go on to start businesses or nonprofits or become politically active or whatever. And I believe that most of that, the vast majority of it, will end up being a positive contribution. So you're freeing the best of society in some ways, or high probability folks in many cases, to go on and have that impact. And so that, I think, is what Bigger Pockets is all about and what the FIRE community is all about. And it's how do we continue to propel that forward so that people are not making decisions with their money where there's waste that's unnecessarily constricting them to the job that I had, for example, when I started off my career.
No, I'm couldn't. And by the way, thank you for bringing up some of those nuances about freedom. So you're a big financial freedom guy, and I that's where my heart is too, because you're right. Money can't buy Scott Trench, and that is beautiful in and of itself. Meaning a better offer from a different company with a bigger check is not the reason you're going to take. You're not necessarily going to take it because you have a mission, and you did connect it back to bigger pockets, which is a beautiful mission. It is all about the ability to, you know, there's millions of people that are subscribers and members of this real estate community and investment community called Bigger Pockets. We are one. We're premier, I think we're pro and owners or whatever, pro members, I should say.
Well,
so we're like all in on Bigger Pockets. We've been for years. And it is doing a great good. I mean, there's parts of your book where you just have to uncover all the different set beliefs that have been in our minds since we were children. This the number one thing that Bigger Pockets has helped millions of people see is that you don't have to wait for retirement to find financial independence, right? So I guess the original American financial independence is retire at 65 with enough money to not have to work again. That's what financial, I guess, independence would have meant to most people, until good guys like yourself and Bigger Pockets are helping people realize, no, that can be today, especially if you buy cash flowing assets. So let's get involved in Set for Life for a minute. Set for Life shows up in your life, which is a book you wrote, published by Bigger Pockets, sitting here. I brought a stack of Bigger Pockets books for the video because I have a lot of them. But Set for Life is your book, How to Dominate Life, Money, and the American Dream. And you just lay out practical steps. And then your show, I feel like, is a manifestation of this as well, Bigger Pockets Money, where you say, we're teaching you the financial literacy in a sense that you didn't learn in school. So this really is your major contribution. That, I mean, I imagine, I'm putting words in your mouth, for the Bigger Pockets content community. But the other big thing about Scott Trench, and it shows up a lot, is the word frugality. You know, so I'm going to go, before I go into financial independence, why are you able, or why do you want to be so frugal? Like, is that something that you grew up with? Did your parents teach you to be a frugal person? Because you are incredible at it. You choose your expenses wisely.
Well, I think.
But frugality, is that something that came easy to you?
Well, I want to be careful about the frugality thing, because frugality is a tool. It's a lever in the wealth building journey. It's not the end state goal, right?
Good.
But you know, when you spend, what's freedom, right? To a college kid, it's $250 and 4 cases of natural light, right? To you know, a guy a year out of college, it's $25,000 in the bank. To a family, it's $5 million. You know, it's a moving target with those types of things, right? But for me, the reason you're frugal is because that is how you build wealth and get over the tipping point of freedom, right? The goal is not to spend, for me, $25,000 a year for the rest of my life. The goal is to spend $25,000 a year until I'm financially free, and then stockpile, if I want, the assets there, do exactly what I want. If I happen to make more money, great. But I am never spending more than my passive income can cover for the rest of my life. So I will always be frugal relative to my wealth, but I may spend a tremendous amount of money on my lifestyle in future years, just never, and I can allow that to happen because of the station I have and these types of things. I could also go and live happily at my current lifestyle and just continue to rein in the controls and the spending there. So to me, there's four levers. You can spend less, earn more, invest your assets, or create assets. And if you want to do all those things, the best position to do that is from a position of financial freedom. You can get to financial freedom with $500,000 in net worth and $25,000 in passive income. You can get there with $1 million and $40,000 a year. You can get there with $10 million and $250,000 a year. My choice is to let that be a moving target and to control my expenses at first, and then do whatever the heck I want the rest of my life, from a lifestyle perspective, as long as it is very responsible within the context of my passively generated income.
I have a question about risk. Right? Risk aversion, risk tolerance for you. You know, as real estate investors, we have a higher level of risk compared to most people, right? But you took another risk at the same time, which was joining a startup and understanding that, hey, this may or may not work, or, you know, like, it wouldn't, for your goals to be a real estate investor, also be well aligned with a company that's going to pay you $150,000, $200,000 a year in the financial industry? Like, why choose the risk of the both at the same time by joining Bigger Pockets and saying, was it the belief and the mission and Dorkin and the team?
Well, let's say this. If I was earning $150,000 a year, I probably would have just spent $30,000 of it and crushed it towards financial freedom in a very quick period of time. I was earning $48,000 a year and, you know, I was probably going to get a raise to 56 or 58 the next year. And instead I took a job making about 50 at BiggerPockets. So there, it wasn't really like a, like, I didn't really have that option that you presented. So in a practical sense, it was like, no, I don't have the option to make $150,000 right now. I can certainly get there in a 3 to 5 or 7 year period, depending on some career tracks. What's the best probability game I can play? And for me, that was either becoming an agent or joining a startup, right? And I didn't really know what my income was going to do at BiggerPockets. I just smelled something growing really well there, loved the brand personally, was a huge fan and was like, this is something I want to be a part of. I couldn't have told you this how the story would unfold after that. So that's honestly how things were at that time. But you mentioned risk, right? I took a risk in buying a house hack and joining a startup at the same time. But guess what? Like, I spent less than half of that income. So like, things could have gone horribly wrong and I could have driven Uber and made it work. So I wasn't taking any risk because the fundamentals of my financial position were so wildly conservative that I could just make these obviously high probability bets with no fear of downside, right? And so that's where it comes down to the frugality thing. Like, the goal is not to be frugal for the rest of your life. The goal is to earn your freedom as fast as you possibly can and then do whatever the heck you want for the rest of your life.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking with Josh and Eric. Enjoy.
You know what I would say, though? You know, you taught me something here, if you don't mind, on this frugal thing, because we started down this path because I wondered if a guy like you enjoyed having the word frugal attached to your name a lot. Even Mr. Josh Dorkin, when I was listening to one of your podcasts, he called you the most impressive guy with financial ducks in a row, you know, he called it. So frugal. But you taught me something. Frugal is actually a principle that we're all going to have to, it, like you said, if it's $1 million of income, then maybe frugal is living on 700,000. Your point is it's relative to the passive income coming in. And that is the key to financial freedom. So I want to remind myself and the listeners, it's not so much what the number or figure is, because you're throwing out amazing numbers like $24,000, $30,000.
Well, it's easy to spend that little if you don't pay for housing, right? And so that was my thing, is like,
yes,
how many more natty lights and beer pong tournaments can I go to at 24 when I don't pay for housing because I'm house hacking, right? And you just take, I just made a pie chart. I was like, oh, housing and transportation. I'm going to buy a Corolla and live in a house hack. Boom. Now I spend 50%. Now I spend $24,000 a year,
so good,
even though I spend plenty on irresponsibly on the weekends. So it was like, that was more the plan with that one. Sorry, just to go on a tangent there. So
no,
I'm reliving
like
the glory days, you can tell, with this.
Yeah, I know. The pongs are flying. I got to play beer pong with you. You're probably not quite as skilled as you once were, but maybe you are. No, but in general, that's the whole thing about passive income. You know, we're in BiggerPockets, but we're also in GoAbundance. And there's this whole thing, they call it horizontal income. I'm sure all your friends are in GoAbundance. And they talk about it a lot. You have to have multiple streams of passive income coming in, and you need to try to live below those. But they don't use the word frugality. You know what they use, Scott? Have you ever heard their little lingo in GoAbundance?
I think wealthy people call it cash flow management.
And, well, they also came up with, they call them 100%ers. Have you heard them? Are you 100%er?
I haven't heard this term.
No? Okay, I was just listening to them the other day, Pat, yeah, Hyben and all those guys. Yeah, they call it, are you 100%er? So you're far better than 100%er. 100%er meaning you live below your passive income. You're 100%. Your passive income covers your living.
Yeah, you reinvest most totally of your passively generated income. Now your snowball just perpetuates forever, and you have a curve you ride up for the rest of your life on that. But yeah, that's I would say yes. I'd abide by that philosophy, just to another level with that. Yeah,
and you know, we could go into a couple cool things because you've done what a lot of other people haven't, which is you've been part of a private equity and all that kind of good stuff. So instead of going down that path, let's talk about the world's perfect investment for Scott Trench in real estate. Since we don't get to hear that all the time on your show, a lot of times I'm listening to your show and I'm hearing you help, and I think it's beautiful the way you and Mindy do it. You break down people's current financial situations. You show them where they're killing it and excelling. I've heard you talk to one woman who's living incredibly tight frugally, and you said to her, you're enviable how you had it. It was like maybe 2 weeks ago. It was enviable how she had designed her life. And I remember listening to her in the show. She was like, you're right. I never thought of it that way. So you guys do a lot of great good for people on that show. But what type of real estate is your passion right now, since you are a real estate investor?
Well, first of all, thank you. That was a nice plug. I appreciate it. But for real estate, like, real estate is a tool to get to financial freedom. And so it is cold, calculated math. It is capitalistic. It is, what is the right investment? How is it going to work? And how does it fit into my system? So my system is I can't predict the market in 1, 3, 5, 7 year increments. So I'm going to buy, but I believe that over 30 years, appreciation, it just particularly in Denver, is going to ride and continue. I believe if I buy consistently but not aggressively, I'm going to be in good shape over that time period. And you know, if you capitalize appropriately, you're going to be able to ride the ups and downs. So it's what is the best investment? It's one that fits in to my system when my financial position is ready for it. And in a practical sense, you also have to, I've learned, like, you can't model this out, because over the years you should earn more income and increase your monthly cash flow on an average basis. So you're making slightly larger bets each time you make a bet over the course of a career if things are going correctly for you. And so it's just every month I slide a couple more chips into the index fund investment, and I set a little bit more aside for the real estate, and I buy or transact every couple of years. So far that's been duplexes, triplexes, and quadplex, or two duplexes and a quadplex, alongside a couple of syndications in recent years, because they're just more passive, but it's the same concept.
That is. So yeah, and you found some quads. Eric, I could ask this guy a lot of great questions. He's so freaking different. You are so unique in a lot of ways, Scott, because you have a certain passion about being disimpassioned. You know what I mean? Like, you're passionate about controlling things, so you have freedom. Freedom, I would say, is a key passion for you. And you're also passionate about making sure the numbers work on your acquisitions, that you're not even worried about rushing it or not rushing it. And you're a long-term bet guy, which we are too. We think the economy says there will be appreciation in these markets because of the dollar infusions and all that kind of stuff. Plus, if you're buying things that are cash flowing, you'll be able to ride through the quasi paper valuation changes because you're cash flowing. And that's a basic principle of what you're buying right now.
I'm really boring, but with that stuff.
No, you're not. But you're funny too. Like, I've listened to you. You're pretty funny.
Oh, thank you.
And you're Robert De Niro. She said you have a Robert De Niro impersonation.
You talking to me?
Oh yeah, I see a little bit of a.
You talking?
Yeah, De Niro in you.
Is it two can keep, three can keep a secret if two of them are dead? Or is that Ben Franklin?
Yeah, that's you. Yeah. That's you. That's your line, yeah. Right?
I you know, there's one thing I wanted to ask you, Scott. Since when we were all together and happy harmony and live at the big Bigger Pockets conference last time we saw each other, you said something to me that's stuck, because I never really thought about it until you said it. You said Bigger Pockets is a tech company. We're two things. We're a tech company and we're an educational company. And I was like, oh crap. I always thought, and a lot of people do think, real estate company. No, I mean, that makes so sense. Can you elaborate on, like, why you guys identify and you say, yeah, that's what we are?
We don't own any real estate. Like, we rent our office space. You're looking at a rental right now that we rent, right? So Bigger Pockets makes money in four ways. We make money on advertisements, on our media content, like podcasts, YouTube channel, social media, forums, blog, newsletter list, those kinds of things. We make money when we sell books and tickets to our conference. We make money when we sell subscriptions, and we make money when we match our users with investor-friendly agents and lenders and those types of things, right? And so what kind of company are we? Well, we are a media publishing subscription, you know, SaaS and lead generation or a marketplace business, right? And so that's how I structured the business and move around those things. And yes, there's a technology component inside of all of that. But really what we are is we're a community and a network. We are a network. Our three uniques, if you guys ever heard of the EOS system or something like that.
Yeah, tell us about your uniques.
Our three uniques are a community, education, and tools. Lots of other people offer one of those things or two of those things, but nobody else, I think, offers all three of those things in quite the way that we do. And that's what our business, I think, fundamentally it differentiates us fundamentally.
Yeah, no, it's admirable what you guys are doing. And it's admirable about the certain authenticity too, though, because there's a certain authenticity in the fact that you as CEO are also a real estate investor, which is the primary content that you guys deliver educationally is real estate investing. As a matter of fact, I guess that comes back to the beginning, right? The story, my paraphrase story is Josh Dworkin was looking for content on buying real estate 12 years ago or something like that. Found it to all be cluttered with gurus and for-profit trainings, and he developed a way to develop or what do you call curate education that didn't have to have a heavy cost. So the barrier entry was low. And then from that ethos, I credit Josh Dworkin with this a lot, because whenever you see Josh or talk to him, he's still that guy, right? I mean, he still is like an editor first, it seems to me. He's very authentic. He does not like the guru world. And so that ethos is still in your company, I imagine. You would agree with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the purpose, yeah, I would say that the purpose of the organization as Josh founded it was to combat the gurus and make democratize real estate investing. That's 100% still true. We're just evolving it slightly to say, how do we empower as many people as possible to achieve financial independence or financial freedom through real estate investing while maintaining those values?
You know what? And you just brought up through real estate investing, because I do think real estate is still the core of your business. But I do hear you guys talk about other things, you know. I mean, I hear you guys on your show, Money, about a lot of 401k investing in index funds. You brought it up here. So do you think it'll ever metamorphosize into more than just real estate as its primary trainings?
Yeah, perhaps one day with that. I think who is the real estate investor, right? Like, who is the person? Like, you're probably talking to some big players who buy lots of properties, but 90% of single family rentals the United States of America are owned by investors with 10 or fewer properties, and 55% of those properties are owned by investors with just one or two properties outside of their primary residence. So most people out there who invest in small residential real estate, which is the folks that are largely on bigger pockets, are small casual investors using this as one of many tools in their portfolio. And it's a very powerful tool. It's a good one. But, you know, the folks that come on the podcasts and all that kind of stuff that are really excited about this are the folks who are doing tons of deals, but they're really a tiny, tiny minority of the folks who are actually buying real estate in this country. And so that's what it is. It's like, what are these folks trying to do? Probably rent out their home after they move out. And that is how they become financially free in a period of time. Many folks go much more aggressively. I highly encourage that and love it, but that's not what everyone's doing. And I think so to serve our investors, we just have to acknowledge that and help them deliver like that. Like on Bigger Pockets Money, that's one of the fun things we're doing is like, hey, this guy has got two properties, a 401k and stock thing. Yes. And like, well, how do we aggregate this all into a more cohesive, streamlined approach to move toward financial freedom? That's the fun challenge that I'm loving solving. Right
I know.
Now.
But it's like your version of the Shark Tank, man. You help people see through it and you're very good. You're a good, you have a good springboard there. It sounds like you and Mindy are a good team on that. And by the way, it's a great compliment to the other portfolio with business and the real estate show and now the rookie show. By the way, whoever's listening to this show, if you haven't enjoyed a Bigger Pockets episode, please check it out. I think you'll be very pleased.
I got a big question that I'm sure a lot of the audience is always wondering, because you know, whenever we meet up and whenever we do our real estate thing, you know, outside of BP, this question always comes up. I'm like, why doesn't BP do more meetups or conferences? Like, how do you stay the course? You guys are so focused on everything you do and you do it so well. As an entrepreneur chasing shiny objects all the time, I'm always like, that's a great model. I'm going to do that. I'm going to build that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But how do you guys stay so focused on what you do and you just crush all the time? Like, not get distracted by all the things people are telling you to do and build.
I'll just walk you through the operating model of Bigger Pockets and what we're doing and where we're going. How's that? You're asking about our strategic plan at some place, right?
So absolutely.
What is that, right? Well, I just told you I've got a media, publishing, subscription, and marketplace business. Those are the four businesses inside of Bigger Pockets. Our podcast program is a factory. We churn out podcasts, right? Somebody and every part of that podcast program has work product associated with it. You've got somebody to book the guest. You've got somebody to host the show. You've got somebody to edit the audio. You've got somebody to write the titles, right? And every part of that requires a different skill set to do well and a different cost for that skill set and those types of things. And I believe our podcast factory is world-class or very close to it. I believe we do an excellent job with that. We have good reviews for those shows. We have good listenership. We know how to monetize it. We have the right amount of ads. We don't need to oversaturate to anything. We have an appropriate amount of advertising that I think delivers a great experience and is profitable. Every show is profitable. Therefore, when I produce more shows, we make more profit rather than compound losses, right? That's an important thing, to be cash flow positive on any one of the activities that you repeat regularly as a business. Our YouTube channel has some more work to go, right? We are not at that level yet. And so one of our goals this quarter is to kind of create that factory for our YouTube program, right? For social media, we've got an excellent platform where with on Instagram, but we need to build out the infrastructure to support more stuff on like Clubhouse, like we mentioned earlier, or TikTok or whatever. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do to lay infrastructure to allow scalability into those things. Our book publishing business, I also think is world-class. If you go on Amazon and look up a real estate book, there's a couple of guys in there, but we have a lot of the top titles there, right? So, you know, where's our strengths, where's our weaknesses, and how do we lay infrastructure to get better in every category we can, but at our own pace and not trying to bite off more than we can chew quarter by quarter, bit by bit. We ran a great conference 2 years ago. Everybody seemed to like it. Everybody also seemed to have feedback on how we could improve very nicely. So the first time. So you know, great job for the team there. We have some work to do to lay infrastructure. We had another year to reset with the pandemic and all that kind of stuff there. Same thing with subscriptions and our marketplaces. We have a very fledgling agent directory that's producing great results. That where else can you find an investor-friendly real estate agent on the internet besides BiggerPockets right now? It's been helpful. But we have a lot of work to do to bring up that same kind of network for lenders or property managers and the things that people that our users want to meet. So anyways, all of these are factories, everything I just described there, and all of them are at different stages of curation. And the idea is to make them all world-class. We'll never achieve that. There'll always be bogeys in there. But as more and more of our programs become strong, it gives us more and more capabilities to go into additional areas. Second part of the strategy. So that's part one. It's just basic process and improving everything we have on an existing basis. I believe our business is so big and so large that we have 2 million members of our website and 100 million people have listened to the Bigger Pockets Real Estate podcast cumulatively. I can create a custom experience for you based on your personalized interests on our website, but I can't do that on the podcast, right? I cannot do it. And the great thing about Bigger Pockets is it's an immersive experience that goes to you. We're there in your car. We're on your bookshelf. We're on your Facebook feed. We're on your Instagram, right? We want you want to immerse with us because you're surrounded by real estate folks and you're not even hearing about all this crap that's going on with politics or whatever. You're focused on your goal of real estate. We want to go to wherever you are. But again, I can't serve everybody. So what we're doing is we're creating these sub-brands, Real Estate Rookie, right? And that allows our core brand to go a little bit more advanced and our rookies to have a place where they can go to learn about cash flow and all the components that make that up. Whereas the more advanced investors can go and think about syndicating deals and those kinds of things, right? We have Bigger Pockets Money. We may build Bigger Pockets Multifamily. We may build sub-brands in the future. So the idea here is to build out those factories one by one and continue to improve them and iterate on what we've got where we're strong and get to strong where we're not quite as strong. And then layer in more and more of these brands around other aspects of real estate investing that allow you to immerse yourself in whatever your specific interest is. So that's kind of the approach that we have at our level. And at each point, you know, we have to make sure that we're bringing in more cash than we spend to operate each one of those divisions. Otherwise, you're scaling something that is losing money. And that's not how you retain your job as CEO over a long period of time.
Scott, I mean, first of all, that is a big deal that you helped us see it. And not only did you help us see a brand that we think is admirable and great, but you're a powerful business leader. You know what I mean? You have a certain, like I said, a passion, but disimpassioned or something like that. It's really a unique gift. No wonder the private equity has asked you to stay on the position. You're a phenomenal voice. You took the journey of Bigger Pockets. You took the journey of being engaged in the content through developing the content. So there's a lot of authenticity in the way you think about the brand. And I am a firm believer and bullish on Bigger Pockets. I think you're right. I don't even think you've touched the surface of where you guys are going to ultimately be. And we're going to stay big supporters, and we really appreciate the work you're doing. So I just want to say thank you. At the end of the show, Eric had an idea, though. Okay, we're not as fancy as Bigger Pockets where they have the final four. He suggested we should ask you if there's a cool new promo coming out right now that you could release to our audience. Is that a fair question, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure we give you a chance to say how we can follow up with some of the content you've shared today.
Absolutely. So this might not be I think everyone will benefit from this, but just know it's kind of geared towards the first-time homebuyer. But Mindy and I just wrote a book called First Time Homebuyer. It's the latest book from Bigger Pockets. And you can go pick that up wherever books are sold. But all of the bonus content is available at biggerpockets.com/homebuyerbonus. And that includes spreadsheets and downloads and all those types of things, check interviewing agents and all that kind of good stuff, little checklists. So go check that out as a giveaway here. That's available to anyone who buys the book and anyone who listens to the show.
Appreciate that. Before we let you go, I do want to share, Josh, sort of my you know, admiration and appreciation for you and everything that Josh built and, you know, Brandon does and David and the whole team and Mindy and everyone. You know, you really changed our lives. You changed Josh's life. I can speak for Josh, I'm imagining, because if it wasn't for Bigger Pockets, I would have probably spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in guru run to the back of the room stuff. And not to say that I didn't, I definitely spent my fair share with the best of my wife. But the thing is, Bigger Pockets saved a lot of money. Just for the educational, the networking. If it wasn't for Bigger Pockets and being able to figure out how to travel to potential locations and find people that are like-minded and doing the same thing that can assist and sort of partner and work together, Bigger Pockets, I always tell people, the biggest social media platform for anyone that wants to get into real estate. It doesn't exist outside in other industries. You know, like the one place, if you want to figure out how to do something, I mean, that's the place to go, is biggerpockets.com. I just want to thank you so much for everything you do, man. It's massive.
Well, I appreciate the plug, Eric, and I'm glad it was very helpful for you guys. And I feel the same way about the company, because that's how I felt before I even joined Bigger Pockets. Before I was even an employee, I was like, this is the way. Oh, wow. There's a whole avenue of building wealth that exists now. It's like a cult. I guess that's too strong. Hopefully, it doesn't turn you off if you're listening, but that was how it felt for me. Yeah. Yeah.
It is religious, though. Like, it's a mindset, it's a belief, it's a following, and there's a certain sort of.
It's actually just to get to be clear for everybody who's new to this, it's not so much it's a cult or it's a mindset that we as people have power to make great choices and to free ourselves. So it's a kind of a testament to independence. And that's obviously what we started the show with. And it's where the whole capital hacking idea came from. You know, I mean, the capital doesn't need to be scary. And attracting it into your life doesn't need to be scary. It's by being around great people, and the networks at Bigger Pockets help you find those people. Scott, thank you for being on the show. We cannot wait to see you again in the future.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Wow, you made it, everybody. Thank you so much. Eric and I have always said that the people who join us at the end get the pearl and the prize.
Awesome. Folks, don't forget to like and share and love what we're doing on social media. If you want to hit up Josh, you want to hit me up, those are the best places to find us. We are always camped out and ready to talk and put the fire on.
We stand by on social media. But by the way, I know we're on Capital Hacking at Instagram, Capital Hacking on Facebook, and Capital Hacking on my personal favorite, LinkedIn.
Yes, because you can always find major players on LinkedIn. I know your favorite. These are some power players on LinkedIn always.
Gary Vee, he's my boy.
But Gary Vee also talks about the power of Instagram. So if you also want to find us there, we're doing a lot of really cool, sexy things on Instagram. So always you can reach out and DM us on Instagram if you have any questions or you want our time. We are always camped out and living there as well.
We will get right back to you. And just like we always say, you are now part of the team. This is a team that's here to add value to your life. And thank you for adding so much value to our life. Remember to share this podcast. Helps us grow it bigger and bigger each week. And we appreciate you posting a review on iTunes. You cannot believe how powerful that is.
Absolutely. Like and share this with anyone and everyone that you think it will add value to. And we appreciate all of that love and support. And do not forget, with great power comes great responsibility.